From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Well, there was some news this past week related to Marian apparitions. Fortunately, all the news is sort of the negative variety, where various Marian apparitions around the world have been declared not supernatural. But on today's show, we're going to be talking about two of the most famous cases of Marian apparitions that have been recognized by the Catholic Church, both occurring in this month of November. And, of course, we're talking about the Miraculous Medal, when Our Lady appeared to St. Catherine Laboure in 1830 and presented that most famous of all Catholic sacramentals, the design for that anyway. And that saint went on to have the medal struck and became the most widely circulated medal in the history of the Catholic world. And we'll be excited today to talk with Donna Maria Cooper O'Boyle, talking to us about that miraculous medal. We'll also be joined by Father Edward Looney, who will be talking to us about some apparitions of Our Lady of Barang in Belgium. That feast day is upon us as well. And we'll be talking about one of the little-known but highly approved Marian apparitions in history. And later in the show, we're going to be looking at They Might Be Saints, like we always do. And for people who want to check out my series, They Might Be Saints, you can watch on December 9th. There's an episode about Monse Grâces, and I examine the saintly life of Monse Grâces, the cheerful 17-year-old who faced cancer with extraordinary faith and joy and could be the first woman of Opus Dei to be declared a saint. She's currently a venerable now. Check that one out, December 9th, They Might Be Saints. And people can check out my other series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. One of the newer episodes is out on November 29th at 5:30 p.m. Central Time, and that's the episode where we explore Buenos Aires. In Buenos Aires, I uncover the story behind a modern Eucharistic miracle, which was an astonishing testament to the real presence that was investigated by the future Pope Francis. So check that one out, Saturday, November 29th at 5:30 p.m., Central Time, Explore Buenos Aires. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the might-be saint of the day. For today, we've got Blessed John of Mercelli, who lived from 1205 to 1283 in Italy. And the 365 Days with Mary project looks at Our Lady of the Conception from San Juan de los Lagos in Mexico in the year 1224. And the question of the week: why in the free will offering of one's life, oblatio vitae, must the person also have lived a virtuous life before their sacrifice? And of course, we're talking about that new path to sainthood. The question is, why does that have anything to do with the virtuous life, have anything to do with that moment of sacrifice? I'll do my best to answer that one later in the show. And we always try to present a miracle of the day, a miracle that's happened on that date in Christian history. And so for today's date, November 30th, in the year 1433, there was a Eucharistic miracle in France. We'll be talking about that one in just a little bit. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week. We talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And this is a Marian apparition that has caught some news lately. I've known of this apparition since the very beginning, ever since I launched MiracleHunter.com. This was an apparition that I knew was being claimed in Korea. And so a Malaysian bishop has cautioned Catholics against visiting a controversial Marian shrine in South Korea, which echoes a recent warning from the Singapore Archdiocese that threatened excommunication for anyone who takes part in a pilgrimage to this unapproved site. In Archbishop Simon Po of Kuching said, Catholics are not permitted to visit Naju, the Marian shrine in the Archdiocese of Gwangju in South Korea, according to a November 4th report in the official diocesan publication Today's Catholic. And Po said that he had confirmed the matter directly with the archbishop, who reiterated that visits to this site remain prohibited. And the Malaysian archbishop urged the faithful to visit only officially approved Catholic pilgrimage sites and churches.
and his directive follows inquiries from the Malaysian Catholics regarding organized pilgrimages to Naju, where several alleged miracles have been reported over the decades. And the Singapore Archdiocese issued a chancery notice on October 31st warning Catholics not to visit the site. And it stated that anyone participating in the activities at the Naju Center, where an alleged visionary continues her ministry against the guidelines of the local ordinary in Korea, would incur automatic excommunication. And the notice also urged those who had previously visited the shrine to stop doing so and to approach a priest for the sacrament of reconciliation for the excommunication to be lifted. And the Naju Shrine, which is located within the jurisdiction of the Gwanggu Archdiocese, is linked to Julia Kim, a mother of four who claimed to have received Marian apparitions beginning in the 1980s. And Kim is a Protestant-turned-Catholic, reported seeing visions of Jesus and the Blessed Virgin Mary, and claimed that her statue of Mary was shedding tears on June 30, 1985. She also said that she had been miraculously cured of terminal cancer. And the devotion of Our Lady of Naju spread. Authorities launched investigations in 1998, and then the Gwanggu Archbishop declared that the reported events were not of supernatural origin. And the Catholic Bishops' Conference has also officially rejected that alleged miracle in Korea. And that's the Korean Bishops' Conference. In 2024, the Gwanggu Archdiocese warned the faithful about this. A priest who was expelled from the Salesian congregation in 2022, who reportedly continued to celebrate sacraments illicitly at the Naju Center. And despite all these different prohibitions, pilgrims from several Asian countries continue to visit Naju, drawn by reports of healings and mystical phenomena that are not recognized by the Catholic Church. And so that is today's miracle news. Another miracle news item comes from Asia in the Philippines. There was this news item we reported some time ago. It was kind of a strange story, I think. And now there's sort of an ending to that story related to the Lipa apparitions. So a Philippine court cleared an exorcist priest accused of this quote-unquote religious insult. So this Dominican father, Winston Cabalding, was arrested for his statements about the 1948 Marian apparition in Batanga. Now, a Philippine court has upheld the dismissal of a criminal case against a Dominican exorcist priest who was arrested for making offensive remarks about the alleged Marian apparition in this Catholic-majority region, a nation. And Father Winston was accused of offending religious feelings over his comments about the reported 1948 Marian apparitions in Lipa City in Batangas. And he was cleared of the criminal case by a division of the Court of Appeals in a 28-page decision delivered on September 29th. However, its release to the media was delayed until more recently. And this decision affirmed the 2024 ruling of the Quezon City Regional Trial Court, which dismissed the petition of this retired justice, Harriet Dementiao. And Dementiao filed a complaint against the Dominican priest in 2022, accusing him of offending the sentiments of followers of Lipa's Vatican or Marian apparitions, which the Vatican had earlier declared supernatural or not supernatural. And Cabading was arrested on May 13, 2023, and he was released after a two-day detention. And the appellate court held that the exorcist priest's remarks about the alleged Lipa apparitions were made on his social media page and not during a religious ceremony. And the court observed the difference as a crucial element in dismissing the case. And the priest's social media program is similar to a show, a broadcast, or dialogue, and does not connote a formal or solemn act prescribed by the ritual of religious procedure, the Court of Appeals stated. And the priest's online discussion about the apparitions fell within the bounds of public discourse, the court indicated, and the Archdiocese of Manila Exorcism Office welcomed this ruling. So a couple strange cases of Marian apparitions out of Asia that have been resolved in some form or another. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we talk about a trivia question and give you a trivia question and give you an answer to win a prize, the face of the image of Mary. And this week, last week in our interviews, we talked about the apparitions of Jesus, with Vincente Leshefsky, who he talks about the visions of Jesus in his new book, World of Jesus's Apparitions. And so the question was, can you name any other church-approved vision of Jesus other than the Sacred Heart or Divine Mercy? And there are numerous examples in the book, of course, but one that sticks out to me is St. Gertrude the Great, who is the only woman who is given the title the Great, strangely, the only saint with that title. St. Gertrude the Great's mystical visions and locutions are among the most detailed and influential in medieval Christian spirituality, and most were recorded in the Herald of Divine Love, also called the Revelations of St. Gertrude, which remains one of the most important works of Christian mysticism. And so if we look at her visions, they had Christ at their center, and they emphasized God's love, his tenderness and desire for union with the soul. They often occurred during Mass in the Divine Office or during Eucharistic adoration, and they had deep insights into the Trinity, salvation, and grace. And she didn't seek these visions. They just began suddenly when she was around 25. And what she described was a conversion experience. And Gertrude is one of the earliest saints to articulate devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And Jesus appeared to her, drew close to her, and allowed her to hear his beating heart. He said his heart beat out of love for humanity, invited her to rest her soul on it. And these visions deeply influenced later saints like St. Margaret Mary Ellicoke. And so that is one of the visions that is detailed in Vincenti's book. And most people don't know any of the other apparitions of Jesus, and so the book is worth looking at for that very simple reason. And this week's question, we're talking about St. Catherine Laboure and the Miraculous Medal. Now, St. Catherine, reported visions of Mary, but she also claimed visions of two other persons besides Mary. And who were they? So who were the two other persons that Mary, St. Catherine Laboure, claimed to see in addition to visions of the Virgin Mary? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week: why in the free will offering of life in the sainthood path oblatio vitae does the person also have to have lived a life of virtue in addition to their sacrifice? I'll try to answer that tricky question in just a little bit.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. When we talk about the most famous apparitions of the Virgin Mary, I think there's always a big three that are mentioned: Fatima, Lourdes, and Guadalupe. But if I had to pick a number four, that would be Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal from Paris in France in the year 1830. And many Catholics know this story. It is one of the most famous Marian apparitions in history, but we have a young saint, St. Catherine Laboure, a novice in the Order of the Sisters of Charity, who had visions of the Blessed Virgin Mary, and she was told of the impending travails of France, and also received a message detailing the designs of a medal later known as the Miraculous Medal, which is now the most widely produced and distributed medal, Catholic medal, in the entire world. Well, we're so excited today to be joined by one of our favorite guests, and that's Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle. You know her on EWTN and author of numerous Catholic books. And she's got this brand new book that's out. It's called Our Life, Our Sweetness, and Our Hope. And in that book, she has a chapter dedicated to Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal. Welcome back to the program today, Donna Marie.
Thank you so much, Michael. Thank you for your warm welcome.
Yeah, it's great to have you back, and I think this is a big feast day that we celebrated this past week for miracle-minded Catholics and otherwise, those people recognizing the importance, the significance of this miraculous medal and the visions which led to its minting. Tell us a little bit, why do you think Catholics around the world get so excited about this sacramental?
Oh, my goodness, because, well, some of them might even might not even realize the significance or even the power of, you know, the miraculous graces imparted through Mary's medal, which is a sacramental after it's blessed. And some, you know the story, like you mentioned, but it's just an amazing story, you know, the history and everything, which we might get into, but just the fact that Mary designed this medal herself, you know, she had every detail in mind, and she presented it to her little humble St. Catherine Laboure, Sister Catherine at the time, you know. And you see, Michael, I know in all of your travels and all of your research, you see too that God chooses the humble, right? He chooses the humble-hearted, and so he chose this little nun, and this little girl, she was a farm girl, turned nun, and very humble and obedient, and things started fast when she became a novice, when things were happening in the convent and later the visions that the Blessed Mother brought to her. So I know you were asking about people and the medal, and I got into that too. Sorry about that.
No, I'm so excited to talk about the story a little bit. I think that a lot of Catholics are familiar with it, but perhaps they don't know the exact details. So when we talk about in 1830 in France, mm-hmm. in Paris, what is going on at that time, and why was this a significant moment for this to happen?
Yes, there's so much unrest and so much fighting and suffering, and Mary actually, yeah, and we notice how she appears in many times during times of unrest, right? Political unrest or whatever it may be, or war, or talking about another war that might come and all of these things. And she comes down to kind of shake us up, wake us up, you know, have us pay attention to the need to repent, to turn to God. You know, so there was a lot going on at that time in France. And Mary even warned St. Catherine, Sister Catherine, during that first apparition in 1830, when she appeared to her in July. I think you mentioned that quickly earlier. That was before she gave her the mission to make and propagate the miraculous medal. But in the first apparition, you know, she spoke about these things, and so you know, blood was being shed, a lot was happening, and you know, it's just miraculous graces from our Blessed Mother in warning the people, in warning Sister Catherine of what was going on. Of course, she told her spiritual director, and he said, "Oh, I don't know about this," you know, whatever she said. And this is
well, that's usually the case, isn't it? When there's an apparition claim, there's a lot of skepticism from the superiors who hear these stories, so that only makes sense that they want to make sure everything is on the mm-hmm. up and up. But when we talk about the scene itself, where St. Catherine perhaps is awoken in the middle of the night, and then she goes into the chapel. Describe what is known about the exact moments that she saw Mary.
Yes, well, first of all, you know, she was aroused by her guardian angel. At the time, she didn't know it was her guardian angel. She thought it was a little boy, you know, radiating great light, and he told her to get up. The Blessed Mother wants to see you. And, of course, she was just so amazed and thrilled at the same time, because she always wanted to see the Blessed Mother, if that was God's will in her life. So she went to the chapel, and at first she didn't know, you know, if Mary was really there, and she heard a rustling of her gown, like a silken gown, and Our Lady came to her and sat on a chair, and little Sister Catherine was able to kneel down and rest her arms right on the Blessed Mother's lap. Can we even imagine that?
I think there aren't other apparitions like that where the visionary interacts physically with Mary. So that's a very special moment, I'm sure.
Yes, yes. And so that's when, you know, Mary spoke to her, but Catherine would say that it was like the loveliest moment of her entire life, you know, just to actually be there with Mother Mary and to be able to be in that. You know, let's just say quickly, Catherine pulled a statue of the Blessed Mother to her heart when she was a 9-year-old girl, when her mother had died. And so she loved Our Lady. And so, you know, she said to her, "Now, Mary, you will be my, now, Blessed Mother, you will be my mother." You know, so she had that faith, and that, you know, she put in that order, you know, kind of like put in the order almost, like, "You're going to be my mother." And she expected the Blessed Mother would just take her under her wing. And of course she did, because she already had her eye on this little girl and already knew that heaven had great plans for her. So I backtracked to that because to show the faith of a child and the love for the Blessed Mother as a child. And that also shows us how, you know, we as adults, you know, for the children in our lives, not to hesitate to let them know there is a beautiful Blessed Mother in heaven. She is our mother. And, you know, we can teach them when they're young and so, you know, can help them as they grow.
And for Catherine Laboure, who had this incredible experience, unlike what most people experience, she had to report it to her spiritual director. And you alluded to that a little bit. And of course, there was another vision in which that's the most famous one, where we see Mary as a designer of a medal, yeah, presenting that to Catherine for that medal to be struck.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that scene where Catherine again encounters the Virgin Mary, but is given a mission at that moment.
So that was on November 27th in 1830 when Mary came back, you know, and Catherine heard that familiar rustling of the silken gown, and there was Mary, and she showed her daughter, Catherine, the exact model of the medal that she herself had designed, and she showed her the front and the back, so the vision actually, you know, turned, and she would see all of these details and would give her this request to carry out. You know, it's never, you know, forced upon us, whatever our Lord wants us to do or Our Lady requests of us. You know, it's always an invitation. So she invited her, you know, to carry out this request. And it was a long process, as we know. But Mary said to her, "Have a medal struck after this model. All who wear it will receive great graces. They should wear it around the neck. Graces will abound for persons who wear it with confidence." And this is what she told Catherine. And then she gave her this beautiful prayer that I hope we're all praying every day, several times a day. It's so short but powerful. She told her the prayer that would be etched around the front of the medal. "O Mary, conceived without sin, pray for us who have recourse to thee." So it's a real powerful prayer. We can, you know, just pray at any time. And it's, you know, we're invoking Mary and we're acknowledging, you know, her, that she's conceived without sin, and we're asking for her prayers.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle.
And of course, about, you know, if you wanted me to...
the miraculous medal. And one of the things is she gets this design for this medal, and she's given this big mission. And of course, like any other of the visionaries, Juan Diego or otherwise, who is given a mission, she's overwhelmed and she must talk to her spiritual director.
Mm-hmm.
What was the response of her spiritual director when the request was presented to strike a medal that was designed by Mary herself? What happened next?
I believe that's the time that he said something like, "Forget about it." and he, you know, of course he has to be careful. She could just be having, you know, delusions or something. But he, you know, he didn't believe it. She had to continue to pray, and the Blessed Mother was requesting that she, you know, get him to, you know, to talk to him about it. And it was doubted, very highly doubted. And it took some time. It definitely took some time and prayer. And finally, though, Michael, how amazing it was when it everything kind of spun into action, and the Archbishop got involved, and like millions of medals were, hundreds of millions of medals were distributed after they were made within the first 40 years after the apparitions. And, you know, the skeptical Father Alladell, he was the one who kept, you know, he was so skeptical and told her, "Forget about it." He ended up writing a large book about the miraculous medal. And I even read that book, Michael. I don't know if I ever told you that. I found it, I read it, and that's where I drew all of my details, all of my research from that authentic, you know, book. So I knew I was getting it right from the horse's mouth. So that was pretty amazing to read his writings and to be able to put together the books that I've put together, like the Miraculous Medal Stories, Prayers, and Devotions book, and then the chapter in this other book. Plus, I always weave it into things because it's so powerful. You know, the story, just we can learn so much about how humility is so necessary, about the spiritual life, about Mary coming, you know, heaven sending her for these missions, and what that medal is for, too. You know, how it's really a tangible sign of hope. It's really, you know, a prayer, some people say, in metal form, M-E-T-A-L form. It's just pretty incredible. And I believe, and I've talked to an exorcist who's told me this too, that it is a powerful protection too when it's blessed. And we don't think about it in a superstitious way. We don't think it's a lucky charm or something like that. It's a real beautiful sacramental that Mary designed. And so I could tell you so many stories. That's why I write so many books, because of my own experiences of seeing these major transformations in people's lives. And the first sisters who distributed the medals were, you know, they would give them to the atheists, the patients that they took care of, and the ones who were grumbling and complaining and really angry, and then slip them under, if they wouldn't accept them, then slip them under their pillows or their mattresses, and they would end up converting. So it's pretty powerful. And as soon as the medal was distributed, you know, around France first, so many cures were happening and miracles of health and mind and body, that the medal that was originally supposed to be called the Medal of the Immaculate Conception took on a name, the Miraculous Medal, because people would hand them out and say, here, take this. It's miraculous. Oh, take this. It's miraculous. And that's how it got its name. And I don't think Mary minds at all, because she continues to work wonders through her medal.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle about Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal, the feast day that we had on November 27th this past week. And there's a chapter in Donna Marie's new book called Our Life, Our Sweetness, and Our Hope that's actually dedicated to Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal. So I encourage people to check that one out. Now, Donna Marie, you wrote this book. It's a Jubilee pilgrim book to line up with this past year. I was in Rome a number of times last year myself. I was a Jubilee pilgrim. I tried to attend Carlo Acutis's canonization several times, but it was a year when so many people traveled to Rome to celebrate that Jubilee, and everybody in their own way around the world, whether they traveled to Rome or not, celebrated that Jubilee. Talk about this book, and what was your hope for this book as it lined up with this big Jubilee year?
Well, thank you so much for asking, Michael. Well, Marian Press asked me to write it, and I wrote it to, you know, to help pilgrims wherever they are. Like, you were a pilgrim going over to Rome, and some people make an armchair pilgrimage, you know. Some people can't get out, like elderly or maybe handicapped, or they'll go to their local shrines or chapels or wherever it may be. Some are designated as, you know, holy doors. Some are designated as pilgrimage sites, wherever it may be. But I wanted to just, you know, focus on Mary as our hope during the pilgrim, you know, the Jubilee year of hope. And so I talk all about Mary. I go through her life, all the key points, and some of her apparitions, the approved apparitions, and some, you know, lots of anecdotes. And so I wanted to bring, you know, to have it available so people could learn more about Mary. You know how, remember, St. Louis de Montfort said, we don't know enough about Jesus because we don't know enough about Mary. And he encouraged people to really get to know Mary so she could bring us straight to Jesus and to perfect our prayers and all those good things. So I wanted people to, you know, to turn to her because she's a welcoming, loving mother. And some people are afraid of God. Some people don't know how to pray, or they're worried about God being angry. And I say, you know, turn to Mary because she's your mother. And as we see through the saints, like St. Catherine, how she took Mary as her mother. So, you know, lots of people are comforted knowing they can have Mary as their mother. And this book is not just for the Jubilee year. It's to kind of set you off, you know, through this year, but then to continue to learn about Mary, to turn to her, to have her bring you closer to Jesus. And I even have lines in this book at the end of the chapters for writing down a prayer, a thought, a resolution. So a place to do a little journaling of your thoughts or what you might resolve to do, what Mary might be inspiring you to do. So it has that as well, and a good hearty prayer appendix in the back, some wonderful prayers that I thought would be very beneficial to the soul. So that kind of in a nutshell, sort of a big nutshell, but that's kind of what this book is all about.
Wonderful. Well, for people who want to find out more about you and perhaps pick up this book or any of your numerous other Catholic books, what is the best place that people should go?
Well, I think my website would be a good place, www.DonnaCooper, COOPER, OBOYLE.com. If you put in Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle, it'll get you to the same place. And then while you're there, if you want, you could subscribe to my free email newsletter where I like to send out inspiration and news and, you know, my new books coming out, stuff like that. So that's a good place to go. And of course, any of my publishers, you can get the books there. And a lot of my books are on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. But to get to know some of my stuff, come to my website, please. I'll be happy to welcome you.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle, for your great reflections on Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal in lieu of the feast day this past week. Thank you so much for joining us on today's program.
Thank you very much, Michael. It's always a joy and a blessing when we get a chance to visit like this. Thank you.
God bless. That was Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle. Check her out on her website. Pick up her book, Our Life, Our Sweetness, and Our Hope, Jubilee Pilgrims of Hope and Hope with Mary. And you can read more about the Miraculous Medal and other aspects of the Virgin Mary and her guidance and assistance for us. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I get a lot of interesting email questions, of course, and I try to answer those when I can, and the best ones I try to reveal on this show. But I also love answering questions in person, and I give talks around the country maybe 10 or 20 times a year. I travel to different parishes or shrines or conferences, where, of course, I talk about miracles and talk about things like Eucharistic miracles or Marian apparitions or sainthood miracles or how the Catholic Church investigates the supernatural. But in any case, I always leave it open for questions at the end. I love hearing what people are thinking about. And so for 15, 20 minutes or more at the end, I always like to hear what people are talking about or thinking about related to miracles. And so people can invite me to their parish. If you go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and click on the contact tab, you can send me a message that way. And maybe I'll be speaking at a parish near you sometime soon. Let's take a look at the question of the week. I love getting these questions in my email inbox. And the question from this week is from Jim. The question is, why in the sainthood path, the free will offering of life, the oblatio vitae, must the person also have lived a virtuous life before their sacrifice? And so it's a little bit of a tricky question, but sainthood is fundamentally about holiness, and it's not just about a single heroic act. And the church canonizes someone because their life reflects holiness and virtue to a degree that can guide the faithful. Even under this new path, the offering of life called oblatio vitae, the church must verify that a stable pattern of Christian virtue, even if it's not heroic virtue in the sense that other saints are canonized, genuine faith and charity sustained over time, a life that tended towards holiness, and a single dramatic sacrifice, while noble, is not enough. Canonization requires evidence that the person habitually chose God and virtue throughout their life. Now, to ensure the sacrifice is truly Christian and it's not morally ambiguous, that's another reason they do this. The church wants to avoid cases where the act could be reckless or driven by despair or influenced by psychological breakdown or it wasn't clearly rooted in Christian charity. And when you have this requirement of a life of virtue, it helps confirm that the final act is consistent with their established moral character, not just an isolated incident or questionable decision. And theologically, of course, martyrdom and oblatio vitae are forms of charity grounded in virtue. Now, Pope Francis, in this Maiorum Ac Delectionem, I think it was in 2017, he made clear that oblatio vitae requires a free and voluntary offering of life for others, the acceptance of a certain and soon-to-come death, and a life lived in consistent practice of Christian virtue, and a reputation for holiness. And this echoes the idea that charity is not a single moment, but a habit of the soul. And so this final act is the ultimate expression of a life already lived well, oriented towards love. And the church wants saints to be examples and trusted intercessors and people whose life reflects the gospel. So if someone had not already lived a virtuous life, even if sacrificial, would not be enough for them to establish it as a model for the universal church. So that's kind of a long-winded and complicated answer, but that's the reason why, in addition to offering up one's life, you have to have lived your life with some sort of virtuous background. Thanks for that great question. If you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th, but believe it or not, for every day of the calendar year, there's a different Marian devotion that lines up exactly to the day's date. And it often commemorates feast days of Mary or miraculous events or the building of basilicas or other ways the Mother of God is honored and celebrated around the world. So for today's date, the 365 Days with Mary project looks at Our Lady of the Conception from San Juan de los Lagos in Mexico in the year 1224. And the story goes that in 1623, some Trappist artists brought the body of their daughter to the San Juan Chapel for burial. And the young acrobat had fallen during practice into some upright blades sticking up into the ground to make this show more thrilling. The chapel caretaker, an old woman named Ana Lucia, put the Virgin's statue on the girl's chest, and the child revived. The grateful father took the fragile statue, made of corn stalks and glue, to Guadalajara for restoration. From then on, the shrine's fame and miracles multiplied. Meanwhile, the town grew, changing its name to San Juan de los Lagos. A new church was built, and then another, larger, more splendid one was built. On November 30th, 1769, the statue was installed in the third church. And that's today's Marian devotion of the day, Our Lady of the Conception, from San Juan de los Lagos in Mexico. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. Today's date is November 30th, and for today's miracle on November 30th, 1433, after days of heavy rain, the Rhone and Sorgue rivers flooded Avignon, submerging parts of the city. And the Grey Penitents, a Franciscan confraternity, rowed by boat toward the small chapel of the Holy Cross, fearing that the exposed Blessed Sacrament had been swept away. When they arrived, they saw that the water had risen to about 4 feet, but miraculously, it had parted on both sides of the church, so that the central aisle, altar, and monstrance remained completely dry. The consecrated host in the monstrance was found untouched, unharmed by the floodwaters. Hundreds of people, including civic authorities, later came to witness the miracle and sang hymns of praise and thanksgiving. In commemoration, every November 30th, the Grey Penitent Brothers gather in this chapel, and before benediction, they sing a chant from the Canticle of Moses, recalling the parting of the Red Sea. And that's today's miracle of the day from November 30th, 1433, that incredible Eucharistic miracle. Let's take a look at sainthood news. We do this every week where we look at the updates on people moving along the path to sainthood. And we always talk about those people who go from servant of God to venerable to blessed and then to saint. And so just this past week on Friday, November 21st, the Holy Father, Pope Leo XIV, received an audience His Eminence Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect of the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. And during this audience, the Pope authorized the same dicastery to promulgate a decree regarding the martyrdom of the servant of God Ubaldo Maccione, a diocesan priest born on May 17, 1918, in Vimignano de Grazzana, Morandi, in Italy. And he was killed out of hatred of the faith on September 29, 1944, in Casaglia, in Italy. And according to the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints website, He was a diocesan priest, born on September 29th, 1944, while on the way to the oratory of the Guardian Angels in Capriano to celebrate Mass. He stopped at the Church of Santa Maria Assunta in Casaglia to save the sacred species and to provide shelter to a small crowd of people frightened by the arrival of Nazi soldiers. He urged the men to take refuge in the woods, keeping only the women and children in the church, but negotiations with the Nazi troops to secure the release failed, and all those presents were taken into the cemetery and killed there. He was first brought to the church and then also murdered, shot in the head. And that is the sainthood news for today. He will be declared a martyr, and with one miracle, he will go on to be named a saint. Let's take a look. They might be saint of the day. We always talk about somebody whose death anniversary or feast day is today's date. So for today, we have Blessed John of Vercelli, who was born around 1205 in Mossa Santa Maria near Vercelli in northern Italy. And he entered the Dominican order as a young man and became known for his learning, humility, and skill in administration. As the sixth Grand Master of the Dominicans, he traveled extensively throughout Europe to strengthen the order and maintain unity amongst its various communities. And he promoted devotion to the Holy Name of Jesus and helped lay the foundations what would later become the Holy Name Society. John of Vercelli died on November 30th, 1283, in Montpellier in France, after a life dedicated to preaching and reform. His long-standing veneration was formally recognized when Pope Pius X beatified him on September 7th, 1903, with one more miracle. Blessed John of Vercelli will become known as Saint John of Vercelli, and he's today's Might Be Saint of the Day. And for people who want to learn more about my project, They Might Be Saints, you can go to ewtnrc.com. That's EWTN's religious catalog, and pick up my book, They Might Be Saints, which catalogs 24 Americans on the path to sainthood. Or you can check out my series, They Might Be Saints, which airs every week on EWTN. People can watch on Tuesday, November 9th, They Might Be Saints, Montse Grasses, where I examine the saintly life of Montse Grasses. She's a cheerful 17-year-old who faced cancer with extraordinary faith and joy, and could be the first woman of Opus Dei to be declared a saint. So check that one out on December 10th, or you can go to theymightbesaints.com, and you can watch any of the episodes on demand. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Father Edward Looney about the Marian apparitions of Barang. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People talk about some of the great Marian apparitions throughout modern history. And when we talk about the 20th century, perhaps we're talking about only four cases that have the full recognition of Rome. And we're talking about, of course, Our Lady of Cabejo in 1981, Fatima in 1917, and then a pair of Marian apparitions that happened in the 1930s in Belgium. And one of those feast days is right around the corner. That is Our Lady of the Golden Heart from Barang in the year 1932. And the story goes that on November 29th, 1932, there was a group of children, I believe aged 9 to 15 or so, and they saw a luminous woman floating above a railroad bridge near their Catholic school, and they were scared and ran home. And the next night, they saw her there again, and she vanished, and they kept coming back. This is one of the most highly recognized apparitions in the history of the church. And it's one that many Catholics don't even know about. So I'm so excited today to talk to somebody who's been to Barang. And we've talked with him many times on this show, one of our favorite guests, and that's Father Edward Looney. Welcome back to the program, Father Edward.
Yeah, grateful to be back with you. And yeah, Barang is one of those apparitions that just found a place in my heart. You know, I just, when I read about it, and maybe it's because I've done a lot of reading and research and writing about Adele Bryce and the Wisconsin Marian apparition, and Adele was a Belgian immigrant, and we're talking about Borang, which is a Belgian Marian apparition. And so I think like that was probably the reason why I was drawn to it, was simply because of that Belgian history there with Adele so many years earlier, and then how Our Lady appears there back in the 1930s.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that many Catholics, you know, are familiar, of course, with the big three, Our Lady of Guadalupe, Lourdes, and Fatima, and they like to say that they support or focus on the approved apparitions of the Catholic Church, but most Catholics don't know about Our Lady of Borang, Our Lady of the Golden Heart. So let's tell the story a little bit. I teased it a little bit in the intro, but what happened on those days leading up to these apparitions?
Yeah, so there were five children that saw the Blessed Virgin Mary, and so they belonged to two different families. The one was the Voisin family, the other was the Dejembre family. And so, as you mentioned, they were, you know, some of the students or the children were at school with the sisters there in the village of Borang. And so the other siblings were going to the convent school to retrieve, to pick up, to meet with their siblings who were at school. And as they were approaching, it was first by the railroad bridge that they saw the Blessed Virgin. And then in another apparition, and as the apparition kind of evolved over the next 33 apparitions from November 29th to January 5th, I believe. And so those 33 apparitions, then Our Lady begins appearing underneath the hawthorn tree. So, you know, a lot of times Our Lady appears around these trees, you know. So Fatima, it was a holm oak tree. In Champion with Adele Bryce, it was a maple and a hemlock tree. And then here you have Our Lady, you know, first the railroad, which is just kind of the busyness of life, and then the hawthorn tree. And she appeared under the tree, which, interestingly enough, the name Borang means under the branch. And so here you have Our Lady appearing underneath the branch. So, you know, just a kind of a beautiful symbolism there in regards to that. But the messages were very simple when Our Lady spoke. You know, she said, always be good. Pray very much. Pray always. She said, do you love my son? Do you love me? So they're very simple messages, but, you know, when we think about a lot of these apparitions, Our Lady's appearing to children, they're very young. And so the simplicity of the message really helps them to know it, to integrate it. Whenever I think about Fatima, I'm just always mesmerized by the fact that these three children were told to pray the rosary every day for peace in the world. And so they began to pray the rosary every day. And so how they responded to that message. And so when you have Our Lady saying to these children in Borang, always be good, well, what does that mean? Well, it means keep the commandments, honor your mother and father, pray very much, pray always. So work on your prayer life, say your simple prayers. When she appeared in La Salette, she told Melanie and Maxim, you know, say your morning and evening prayers. So we see a lot of the same messages over all of these apparitions that really they're just kind of repeating themselves, but reminding them and us at the same time now what we need to do, to pray and to obey the commandments.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Father Edward Looney about Our Lady of Borang in Belgium, those apparitions in 1932. And when we talk about Our Lady of Borang, that she's known as Our Lady of the Golden Heart, and that's because one of the very last apparitions, there's a golden heart that appears with her. So talk about that scene, that showing of her golden heart.
Yeah, we're so familiar, you know, with the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And so in one of these apparitions, as you mentioned, Our Lady reveals her heart. So they keep asking her, you know, what is your name? And she says first, you know, I'm the Immaculate Virgin. And then she says, I'm the Queen of Heaven. But then, you know, we always kind of refer to it because in the apparition, when she shows her heart, it's a golden heart. So, you know, the heart of gold, the house of gold, you know, so a lot of different images come to mind just from that simple little image that Our Lady allowed the children to see. But the heart reveals Mary's love. And so she's coming to these children because she loves them, and to invite them to love her son. Do you love my son? Do you love me? And so, you know, look at my heart, look at my golden heart, and how much I love you. And so, yeah, I think there's a beautiful reflection about the Immaculate Heart, like, you know, that we want to love with the heart of Mary, and that we know that the heart of Mary already loves us as well. And that was just, again, another little emphasis in this apparition was the heart of Our Lady, which, you know, comes on the heels of the apparitions in Fatima, not only the 1917 apparitions, but also the First Saturday apparitions of 1925 and 1929 and such to Sister Lucia. So, you know, we see kind of the continuation of the devotion of the Immaculate Heart, which has been a part of the church from early on, from the gospel writers saying that St. Luke saying Mary treasured these things in her heart, to Simeon saying that a sword of sorrow would pierce her heart, to the devotion that was promoted by St. John Eudes or so many of the other saints who spoke about the heart of Our Lady.
Yeah, very, very well put. And I think that one of the interesting aspects of this, it's kind of a timely thing. We were talking before and you were mentioning how this is such a good Marian apparition for this time of year itself as we head into Advent. Talk a little bit about the connection that one might draw with Our Lady of Bourang appearing just at this time of year.
Yeah, so of course right now we're entering into the Advent season. We have the first Sunday of Advent on November 30th. So, but the apparition here begins November 29th of 1932. So I would have to look up when the first Sunday of Advent in 1932 was. But either it's happening right before or right at the beginning of the season of Advent. So just kind of the season of waiting, of preparation. You know, again, she appears at this train station. That's the first version of people waiting for the train. So Advent is all about waiting. And so there is this, that they were waiting for their siblings, for their friends, for who were taking instruction that day. So there is a sense just of waiting with the apparition and the visionaries, the children and such. But then December 8th was, you know, within that, so you have the Feast of the Immaculate Conception of Our Lady, and it was on that feast day, probably because it's a Marian feast day. Our Lady is allegedly appearing there, you know, for that time. And so it drew 15,000, 20,000 people. They were conducting studies on the children that day of December 8th. And so, so Our Lady just comes to be with the children to really prepare them for Christmas then, so for December 25th. And the message is, I will convert sinners. Well, conversion takes place during the season of Advent. It's a mini Lent. And so we say, you know, prepare the way of the Lord, make straight his paths. Well, that's Mary now. I will convert sinners. And I think that's a very emphatic statement of Our Lady. And so how will she do it? Well, by her example is the Immaculate Conception, by giving birth to her son Jesus, that sinners will be converted by his message. Pray, pray very much, pray always. Well, this is a time in which we do pray. Do you love my son? Do you love me? Well, how can you not look at the Christmas manger on Christmas Day and not hear Jesus as the infant say, do you love me? And as we look at the infant, that we say, you know, I love you, Jesus. And so that's our heart pouring out our love and seeing Our Lady there, the love that she's giving to her son, Jesus, as well. So, and then she says, I will be the mother of God's children. And that's another thing she says. Well, by becoming the mother of the Savior, she becomes the mother of all of us. And then one other interesting thing she said at Bourang, she said, I have come so that people will come on pilgrimage. People have gone on pilgrimage to Bethlehem, to all the holy sites. But here's another pilgrimage site for the people then. People will go there during the war. They will pray as the Second World War happens. And so it becomes a place of prayer, of praying the rosary and all that. But so you have the Advent season, you have Christmas, and then it ends right as the octave, you know, comes to an end and as the Epiphany approaches. So you kind of get these three different times of the church during this special season that the apparition encompasses. And yeah, I just think there is something there, and I know I read something about it once upon a time, and I'd love to go back and find that again.
We've been talking today with Father Edward Looney about Our Lady of Bourang, Our Lady of the Golden Heart, with the Golden Heart. And I think that your reflections about how this connects with Advent are very apropos, especially with your book, Praying with the Church Through Advent. Talk a little bit about, I know this book came out last year, but we have Advent on coming right up again, so the timing is perfect for this. How can we pray with the church through Advent, especially in light of Mary and her praying with us?
Yeah, you know, so once upon a time, I wrote a book for Lent, praying with, you know, Our Lady during Lent and her messages and living those messages. And that was really inspired by Donna Cooperrow Boyle's book, Praying with the Church Through Advent, where she takes Our Lady of Fatima and reflects upon the Fatima apparition all throughout Advent. So, so Mary can really be a companion as we wait with her. This is really her final days of her pregnancy. It's her own Advent of seeing the Lord as he is born on Christmas Day. So the book, Praying with the Church Through Advent, the mindset there in that devotional that I wrote is just taking the daily prayer of the Mass. So it's called the opening prayer, the collect, and I just reflect on that prayer every day. And so as we pray that prayer, well, what does that prayer say? What does it mean? How can I live it in my life? And so by doing that, like, our life becomes a prayer to the Lord as we try to live that prayer of the church. So if it's a prayer that you haven't really focused on when, you know, the priest says, let us pray or chant it, and sometimes you're like, what did he just say? This would be a book to help you better appreciate that prayer right before the liturgy of the word when we hear the first reading.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Edward Looney, for joining us to talk about Our Lady of the Golden Heart from Bourang, and also to talk about your book. And we encourage people to check this one out, Praying with the Church Through Advent. Both that apparition and your book are very timely for this time of year. Thank you so much, Father Edward, for joining us on today's program.
Well, thank you so much, Michael.
God bless. That was Father Edward Looney talking to us today. Check out his book, Praying with the Church Through Advent. And you can check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, if you Google Explore with the Miracle Hunter on demand, or just explorewiththemiraclehunter.com. You can actually watch an episode about Bourang when I was there, and we did some recreations and told that story as well. So for people who want to learn more, they can check that one out. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you miss any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio. Check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guests today, Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle, talking to us about Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal, and Father Edward Looney talking to us about Our Lady with Golden Heart from Bourang. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, on Saturday, November 29th at 5:30 p.m. Central Time. The episode airs on Buenos Aires. In Buenos Aires, I uncover the story behind a modern Eucharistic miracle, an astonishing testament to the real presence, investigated by the future Pope Francis. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.